When we build a house, what's the first thing you build? It's not the really cool exterior. It's not the incredible rooms where all the great stuff happens. It's the foundation that you don't even see. When the house is finished, that foundation is buried and oftentimes even out of mind. And the thing is, data standards, which is what we're going to talk about today, is often the same way. It's something we take for granted. We walk on it every single day without ever seeing it. And yet data standards are what produce the actual raw material, that foundation, the basis for what we are going to do with analytics in every other place in our organization. And as super busy nonprofits, it's not always fun to think about, do I actually have good data standards in place? And stop and examine how you're collecting your data from your donors, from your programs, from your volunteers. Because if you find out that maybe things aren't all being done the same way across the board and across different people and different volunteers and turnover in staff and your new growing team, it means that you've got to sit down and create those standards. And that can seem like a daunting task on top of the thousands of other things that you have to do. But my guest today, who is incredibly humble and very understated about his great accomplishments and really deep knowledge about this topic, is going to show a few ways that we actually can start to tackle the problem of making sure our data is consistent across people, across systems, and across time, so that we really can build a house that stands and succeeds. Hello, and welcome to Heart, Soul, and Data, the podcast where we explore the human side of analytics to amplify the impact of nonprofits everywhere. With me, your host, Alexandra Mannerings. I am thrilled to be joined today by Dave from Driven. So Dave, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey everybody, I'm Dave. So I am the CEO and one of the founders of the nonprofit software platform Driven. Excited to be here today because data is one thing that we care a lot about at Driven as well, because it's so important. And it is really one of those foundational things that is going to often determine whether you're going to be able to be successful or not with your database. So really excited to dig in and talk about it. And thanks for having me today.
Well, I'm excited. And we even got started wanting to have this podcast because we got into a talk about data standards and how often this is a topic that's really missed. We need to collect data. All right, let's get a system to collect data. All right, now we have data, let's go. And we kind of miss this more holistic idea, really, of having standards on how we collect data. So for those who might not be familiar with this concept of standards in data collection, explain a little bit what this means.
Yeah, so, and I mean, I think it is a great way to think about it in terms of like thinking of the foundation of a house or a building, right? Because, there's a lot of time spent talking about sort of how you can leverage your data and how powerful it can be and how it can inform decisions. And that's all true, but it sort of is dependent on the foundation being solid, right? And so what typically will happen in an organization is you'll sort of have a scenario where, you know, just as you described there, people are excited, they get a new platform, they're, you know, let's get going, you know, let's put the data in. And then what happens, and this doesn't happen overnight, this is a, you know, sometimes 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 year, sometimes more thing where when you start, you have, you know, person A in charge of entering all of the manual data into the system. And then, you know, maybe they move on to another organization, get a better opportunity. So you have person B comes in and fills the role, and then they do it a little bit differently than person A did. Right. And then the organization grows and now you have person B, C, and D all sort of entering data because there's just too much for one person. And each of them are sort of doing it slightly different and have little quirks about how they enter the data. And so obviously the problem that this creates is when you want to report on some things, you know, obviously the numbers are generally pretty, are not going to vary, but the other things and the different tags and the way you've categorized the data, it can be a real big challenge to sort of pull that out and you know, get those insights. And so that's what we are talking about when we say standards of data collection, meaning, you know, the first thing that you want to do, you know, and if you haven't been doing this and you've been running a database, you know what? it is what it is, but you know, it's one of those things where the best time to start is yesterday, right? And the second best time to start is today. It's one of those things where you outline what the criteria is going to be. This is how we enter this type of data, and this is how we, you know, this type of donation, and this is how we categorize it, and this is our process. You know, instead of sort of someone just figuring it out as they go, or learning how to use the system and then passing that on to the next person who passes that on to the next person, and we creating this sort of like data version of the telephone game where just things migrate over time. You know, you have actually a document that outlines these are our processes, making sure that there is an understood, accepted way of this is how we track data in this system. You know, and so if you change CRMs, which happens as well, it's not uncommon. It doesn't happen every day, but it does happen regularly. Oftentimes you're going to have to modify that document as well, because the new CRM may do things in a different way. So what worked before may need to change. But that's what we are talking about when we say standards of data collection and putting that in place.
The idea of this being a foundation, I think, is a great example or a great way of talking about it, because it isn't just for the people collecting the data. It is first for them, because they're the ones who are going to be using it first, but it's going to be for people analyzing the data. It's going to be for people reading the analysis of that data. It's going to be for anyone that you share that data with. And again, any systems that are built off of that data will use that in mapping. They'll use it in understanding translations from one source to another. The number of times I've talked to organizations where, one, they don't even know what data they're collecting, because there's no data dictionary. There's no list of here's all of the fields. Or they'll read the title, right, the name of a field, and assume it means something when it means something either slightly different or completely different. Or they won't realize the source of that field, and they won't therefore understand limitations of it or how best to apply it. And so, yes, this idea that it is the underpinnings of everything successful that comes from data, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Who should be the one or ones, if it's a group, who are actually going to be determining what those standards are?
Yeah, and I mean, this is going to depend on, you know, organization to organization, right? Because this isn't a one size fits all, but this definitely isn't a task that you want to sort of assign to the junior person in the team and, you know, say, take care of this, right? Because they're not necessarily going to have a full overview of everything that the organization is doing and why some of these decisions matter. You'll definitely want to incorporate feedback from, you know, that junior person and involve them in the process, because some of the decisions you might be making at that higher leadership level might be putting undue strain on that individual. But this is definitely sort of a more sort of senior strategic process versus some busy work or a task to be assigned to someone junior. And then sort of where in the structure is just going to depend on the size of the organization, right? If it's a very small organization, it might be the executive director that's heading this up. If it is a medium-sized, you know, perhaps a director of development or something like that. But, you know, it's going to vary.
And you bring up a good point that it is going to be a we. That very rarely it's going to be one person who does it, regardless of the size of the organization. There's going to be multiple people. It might be headed by an executive director or a director, but it's going to involve people collecting the data, people using the data. People, like, if you're doing fundraising data, you want to talk to the actual development people, because they may have insight into why did we decide to code different donation campaigns this way versus that way, or what happened when we switched to having like virtual versus in person, did our code schedule switch or whatever that might be. So having all of that documentation, and you get at the, there's a lot of legacy information about the operations of your nonprofit that's going to feed into understanding the data that's been collected.
Absolutely.
We talked about a few pitfalls, I think, already. One is not even having data standards. Two is making the new person that you just hired for your database collection just figure it out. You know, get a data dictionary put together for us. That can be a really common mistake. I think it's like social media. We always punt it onto the intern, but it's this really important thing.
Yeah, for sure.
What are some other really common challenges that you see to getting to this consistent data collection?
Yeah, and I would say the biggest, like bar none, biggest challenge is just change management. Because, you know, we people, and I include myself in that, you know, we have this, you know, funny quirk where we really don't like to change. Although we're really good at adapting to change, we just hate it. We want things to stay the same. So especially if you haven't had this for a long time and things have been running fine, you know, in quotations, and there hasn't been any problems, it can be a challenge sometimes to get buy-in from your team to sort of adopt these processes. And that's one of the reasons why you want to incorporate the we in the decisions. It's not only to sort of get insights on sort of what they know from their view of how the process is running, but to involve them in the process so that they feel involved and we can sort of try and preserve some of what they are familiar with in the new process, as opposed to sort of just dictating from on high, here's the new process, start doing it. You know, that's sort of what the big one. And you typically, depending on the organization, you need to have sort of a process to follow up on what's happening once you implement that process. Is it being adopted? Are people not adopting it? And you know, it's, you know, I don't find it helpful to sort of approach it as a carrot and stick perspective, but you definitely want to be coaching the people that are responsible for entering the data and making sure that the process is being followed. Because if you just sort of put it in place and assume that it's happening, you're likely going to be in for a rude awakening at some point in the future.
And I think, as you said, starting with that why do we want to have consistent data collection? If you can come up with a specific data challenge or examples of problems that could have been solved with better data or more consistent data, that gives a really great why. And I think you also earlier mentioned a different kind of change management, which is the ongoing changes that might have to be incorporated in this. So you have people have to do something different, because if you're standardizing it, it means that people were doing non-standard things and therefore they all have to come together to this standard way of doing it. Also, life goes on. And so your systems change, or what you're doing changes, right? Whether you moved from in-person to virtual and now you have to have new code structures, or whether it's that, you know, now you have additional people collecting data or a new CRM or whatever it is. So how do you also manage those continual adaptations to your data process?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And for me, I think it's more, you know, it doesn't stop with just like defining, you know, what the data means in the system. It goes beyond that. It's also important to have, you know, the you know, almost handbook process of this is how the data actually gets entered. And this is how we do this type of donation. And this is how we do a sponsorship of an event. And this is how we do gift in kind. And not only is it good to document that and make sure that process is being followed, but when someone new comes on, whether joining the team or replacing someone, you have that guide of this is how your job, you know, that part of your job, that data entry is going to be done. If you don't provide that, people will figure it out and they'll just do whatever they figure out. And that will not likely hit all of the boxes of what you're looking for. It's important to have that sort of institutional knowledge that sort of moves, it changes and adapts with the organization as the organization changes, because we don't stay still. We move, we grow, we contract, and you know, our organizations are no different.
Do you have any specific examples of steps or actions or activities or even tools that organizations could use to really make sure that they're getting the most consistent usable data, you know, and have the most properly documented and used processes for these standards?
You know, one of the big things is the software that you're using. And I think that's sort of something that's really, really, a really important consideration when you're considering making a change, how you record the data and how the new system is going to support that, right? Because if you figure that out after making a purchase and after implementing, you know, you may find yourself in a situation where you have to compromise because the new system can't do it in the way that you want to do it. Software can't do everything. And so that's a really important consideration, I think. And another way that software plays a key role is how the application that you go with, the CRM that you go with, handles processes and data. Because it can be, you know, a lot of these sort of things, like say people entering the city as Chicago, CH, you know, typo of Chicago and so on, that type of problem, most modern CRMs should do away with needing to set a standard around that. It should be done in a way where you can't make a mistake. And so you can remove that process or need to have that defined in your processes, because you don't have to worry about, this is how we define a city. There's no variability there. So that's one thing that I think can sort of really help. I know it's relatively simple these days to also do like a sanitization, meaning if someone enters the data, a name in all caps, it will put it in proper case and have capital first letter and lowercase. So there's a lot of those low-hanging fruit that you can sort of, that technology can help you with. And that sort of, you know, makes mental space for sort of the more fuzzy stuff that a computer can't help you with and you know, help there, right?
Yeah, that's one of my mottos, is let computers do things computers are good at and let humans do things that humans are good at. And we as humans are terrible about writing in a word and having it exactly look the way that it's supposed to. But computers are very good at remembering lists of items. So that's actually a great thing, is how do you build the actual process of data collection to automatically enforce these standards wherever possible, rather than forcing a human to try to do this on their own when that's not going to be something we're good at. I think even a simple one is making sure that you use dropdowns or checklists wherever possible, rather than asking someone to manually type something in or you know, copy and paste. Like, that's never a good idea. Or using smarter algorithms, you know, that can either predict, like you start typing Chicago and it's like, did you mean Chicago, Illinois? And they can be like, yes, I did. So using computers to store all of that kind of stuff and not making us do that. But then you do have then a whole fuzzier group of things that someone's going to have to sit down and actually make a decision on. That's a great point. We can get the easier stuff hopefully out of the way using those automated systems. Are there any other elements that nonprofits should really focus on first in terms of getting right when they start out, or as soon as they take that the decision to, we're going to actually get these standards, should they try to do it all at once and say, we're going to get everything right? Or should they pick a certain type of data first? And if so, which type of data?
I feel like that's tricky because, you know, I know, at least I'm sure your experience is the same as mine. You know, we never work with a nonprofit that comes to us and says, I have so much time, you know, Alexander, Dave, I don't know how to keep my days full because I just, you know, there's just nothing going on, right? It's always, we're running 3 weeks behind and we need this done yesterday. And I don't know how I'm going to do all of the stuff that I have to get done on the time that I have to get done, right? So it's a challenge from that perspective to make the time. But the nature of data is, if you do part of it now and part of it later, you're going to have a time period where you can't get reliable results potentially from your data because, you know, you didn't finish the standard. Ideally, the foundation should be laid fully, right? It's going back to our analogy of a house. It's kind of like, can you build half the foundation and the house on that, and then the other half of the foundation and the other half of the house on top of that? I assume that's probably physically possible, but is it a good idea? And will it, you know, give you a very stable house afterwards? Probably not. It is one of those things where unless you absolutely cannot make the time, you really should sort of define the process from A to Z rather than starting and sort of just, you know, partially implementing the strategy. I think another thing that's really important to think about or consider when you're doing that is, like, actually, what are all of the use cases and what do you want to do with this data? You may not need to have like a very, very, very complex process of storing the data. If, you know, if you're a smaller organization and your reporting needs are simple, it's gonna vary, right? But if you don't think about, okay, what do all of the stakeholders want to do with this data, right? What does the fundraising department want to do? What does, you know, the executive director or the C-suite in the organization want to do with the data? What matters to them? You know, what matters to sort of the people that are entering the data? You know, you've got to think that through and make sure that you're covering your bases as well as you can.
And it's interesting because the actual process of data to analysis always starts with collection and ends with insight. But the strategy of data is reversed. You should start with what is it that you actually need to know? And then you back engineer your way ultimately to the what do you need to collect. And it's interesting because we kind of forget that those processes run it in completely opposite directions. And it's oftentimes that when we go to think about our strategy, we start with, well, what should we collect and how should we collect it? And yet you can't actually answer that question without thinking about the end first.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, if you're listening to this and you've realized that that's how you've started, I mean, don't feel bad. This is something that, you know, is very common. Honestly, one of the things that we did as we sort of developed our CRM is we sort of just assumed that from day one, every type of data that we are collecting, just assume that someone's going to want to report on it at some point. And so that gave us sort of a database schema where when, not 100% of the time, but very often when sort of you start with a collection and then you're thinking about the insights later and someone's like a customer comes to us and is like, hey, can we report on X? You know, we could often say yes, because, you know, the system has been transparently tracking that for you. So we do have that information for you to report on. And here's the report that'll do it for you, right? That won't always be the case because not every CRM is different and they have their strengths and their weaknesses. So it is an important thing to sort of think about if you're going to undergo a process like this.
Well, and also when you're having to make those fuzzier decisions, there's not usually a right answer, like a definitively right answer. You're having to weigh, well, if we define this thing this way, that gives us this, but we lose that. Or if we define it that way, we'll gain this and lose that. And so you might end up making a call that you made maybe because one was easier to collect than the other, but then it finds out that you actually needed the harder to collect one for your actual insights.
So. Yeah. And I mean, a couple of like great questions to always ask when you're going through these processes, like one, if this is a freeform field, does it need to be a freeform field? Because it should never be freeform unless it absolutely has to be. You know, what are we going to do with this data, right? Because if you're, you know, if you never ever have any plans to ever send out any birthday cards or any notices, then you don't need someone's birthday, right? Unless you're running a volunteer program that, you know, has age restrictions or whatever. So asking questions like that and sort of just thinking through, okay, what will we actually do with this data is really helpful.
And I like you hit on two things. One is, will we use it? Because if the answer is no, we have no intention of using this, there are certain data elements that you should then avoid collecting, right? Don't collect someone's birth date unless you have a need for it, because that's sensitive data. And then how you collect it, right? If it's a free form, assume that you will never summarize data according to that form, right? If it's a free enter text, that means it's a piece of information you will only ever use in isolation, right? Someone's name. You're not going to group on all Alexandras and therefore need them to all be spelled the same. But you might address an individual thing to an Alexandra and therefore you can use their free text entered name. But if you're trying to group on city, you darn well better have a dropdown or an intelligent selection that's going to make sure that it's standardizing the city that's being selected.
Absolutely.
All right, so we've talked a ton about ways that we can standardize our data, places where we might make a few mistakes. We've gotten to the point where we know we should have a document, right? A data dictionary is oftentimes what they're called, or a data document of some kind that defines all of the fields that we're collecting, how they should be collected, but maybe some caveats about them if there's known weaknesses in there. We know that that document should be developed as a team, right? Yep. We have a group that's feeding into that. We're looking at then our process itself, making sure that we're picking, like, should it be freeform? Should it be drop down? Should we even be collecting this based on how we ultimately are going to be using that? Besides those activities of data standardization, what would be like the next most important thing for organizations to consider and work on when they're trying to maximize the value of this data resource that they're trying to steward?
That's a tough question. I think it's one of those things that you need to also accept that this isn't a one and done process. You're not going to build your data dictionary and your handbook on how data gets entered and make sure that your staff are following that process and then, you know, never look at it again. It is something that should be reviewed periodically, like perhaps once a year, maybe every other year, because things do change, right? And so you may today say, we will never, ever acknowledge or send any birthday acknowledgements out to our donors or reference that. So we don't need that. But 2 years from now, when you do a data review, you may be sort of getting into a major donor campaign where you're going to start trying to cultivate major donors. And going towards that, having birthday can be important, right? Because that's the type of personalized interaction you're going to want to foster with those major donors that you're trying to cultivate gifts from, right? You're going to want to send them a quick note or a card or something on their birthday and wish them a happy birthday. So things will change over time. And it's always better to sort of get on in front and fix the problem before you sort of realize that you have a problem and, you know, you haven't been collecting some data that wasn't key before, but is now key. And you just sort of, you're behind the gun because you've missed it for, you know, 6 months or 3 months or however long it's been.
That's a great point. I think it's often easy to forget that your data team, or at least a key representative of your data team, should have a seat when you're discussing strategy, right? They should be at that table talking about what's our next year strategy, our 3 year strategy, because so many of those decisions that are made there are going to end up coming back to the data and the data collection. And I feel like sometimes data collection is viewed as so, I don't know if it's mundane or nitty gritty, that it's like, oh, we don't have to worry about that when we're thinking, you know, the 30,000 foot view, but you really do have to make sure that those are constantly in conversation.
Well, and that's the thing that it's easy to lose sight of, right? What you are looking at from that 30,000 foot view is the building that's built on the foundation of your data, right? So if it's not solid, then, you know, the picture that you're looking at might be giving you information that's not helpful. You know, and again, this is, you know, there's so much more you can dig into in terms of like data analytics and all that sort of stuff, right? But this is the foundation where if this isn't there, none of those building blocks will stay. They're going to slide off.
I feel like the data standards is a very unsexy thing. It gets so little love, and yet it is so, so, so important.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yes. Well, thank you so much for sharing these great insights. I think there's a lot here for people to be able to take action on and really start to move forward in making this happen. If people want to learn more from you or from your organization, where could they go?
Well, they can visit us on the web at trustdriven.com. And I'm always happy to, field an email or question from anybody. So they can email me at dave@trustdriven.com. We'd be happy to help.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Dave. This has been a great conversation. And as always, I love chatting with you.
No problem. Yeah, I enjoyed it too. So thanks for having me.
I hope that you are inspired after listening to Dave to review your data dictionary and data processes if you've already documented them, or if you haven't, that you're ready to really take that step and put it to paper. Make sure that you have documentation about how you collect your data so that everyone can do it the same, and anyone using that data from now until perpetuity, when that data is still in use, will know where it came from, what it means, and how they can use it. So if you're ready to get started and maybe a little confused about where to get started still, or a little overwhelmed about taking that first step, let me recommend what Dave talked about with who should be on that team. Start with getting the people together who can help you get this to happen. It may be you. You may be the most knowledgeable person about this in your organization, but it may not be you. And the people that I really recommend having on this team, you want to make sure you have the person who's been there the longest. Find someone with some institutional memory who knows why things are the way that they are and what changes may have happened that could influence the existing data that you have or the decisions that have been made about collecting that data. Make sure you have a senior champion for this, right? Someone who's going to be tied into the strategy of the organization. As Dave said, maybe a director, maybe even the ED if it's a small enough nonprofit. You've got to have somebody who is going to be able to say where the organization is going strategically so that you can make sure the data you're collecting is going to fit and support that strategy. And then you want to make sure that you've got someone who represents each stage of your analytic journey. Who's entering the data? If there's processing of that data that's happening, who's doing that processing? If someone in-house is doing analytics, who's doing that analytics and what are they doing with it so you can make sure that you're supporting the analytics that they're doing? And then if there's communication of that data, right? So you've analyzed it, you've created insights. Is that going public? Is it going to stakeholders? Is it going to different parts of the organization? Because you also need to make sure that you can support that use and the communications and the leverage of that. And then anyone else who's touching the data and using it in operations, you want to make sure you're doing that too, right? If someone is sending out those birthday emails or cards and the data collection people say, well, I never use it. And the analysis people say, I never use it. You might get rid of birth date and find out that actually it was being used somewhere along the way. So when you get that team together, you'll find that these conversations start showing you the steps that you'll need to take to make sure that you've got the most solid foundation for analytics that you can have. And there's so much in here. You can have a little checklist. We'll make sure that we've got the highlights on our show notes on our site. If you haven't checked it out, it's heartsouldata.com. So you can go to that site. You can see some of the show notes. I try to call out a few highlights of every episode. And of course, you can reach out to Dave. He shared his email. He's an incredible gentleman with so much knowledge. So if you do need anything, check out him, check out Driven. And the last thing I'd like to say is, if you would like to be a guest on this show, or you know someone who would make a great interview for us to learn about, or lastly, if there's a topic you want to know, don't forget to drop me a line at contact us on our website. Love to hear from it. I want to make this as useful as possible for y'all. So thank you again for joining us. You've been listening to Heart, Soul, and Data. This podcast is brought to you by Miraconos, an analytics, education, consulting, and data services company dedicated to helping nonprofits amplify their impact through data. Learn more at Miraconos.com, MERAKINOS.com.